Welcome to the Azure Podcast, a series of short discussions on various topics related to the Microsoft Cloud Platform. Your hosts, Kale Teeter, Evan Basilek, and Sujit Mello, discuss a specific topic on each show to give you a high-level overview of that topic, and resources to get more information should you wish to dig further. For more information on our show, please see our website at azpodcast.com. Well, welcome to the year-end episode of the Azure Podcast. This is episode number 109, being recorded on the 30th of December, 2015. My name is Sujit Mello. On Skype with me, I have Kale Teeter, and Evan may join us. We're not sure he's on vacation, but he might surprise us. We'll let him join the show whenever he gets on. But let's get started here, Kale. An exciting year, no doubt, for Azure, and we thought we'll take some time just to reflect on the year, some of the episodes that we've done, and some of the highlights of the year, and maybe any lowlights that that come to mind as it relates to Azure. How does that sound?
Yeah, I think it's a great idea. End of the year, wrapping up 2015, so good to take a look back and see what we got accomplished this year.
Right, but of course, what did you get for Christmas? Anything good?
Most of my stuff was close, as usual. I have a couple tech gifts that I got. I got the new Band 2.
I got that too. Stuff there.
Yeah.
Nice.
And a new monitor and those kind of things, so some nice things. I have a Raspberry Pi I got, by the way, too. Raspberry Pi 2. I've been playing around with that.
That's nice. Now, that runs Java, right?
I can run Windows as well. I run both. It's Raspbian, I think, is the Linux distro that runs on it. I run that primarily on it, but I also ran the Windows 10 IoT on it. It runs very well.
So that can run on a regular Raspberry Pi. You don't need the Netduino or some one of those things.
Nah, I can run on it. I don't know if it runs on the older ones. This one's, I think that this Raspberry Pi 2 is it's a quad core 900 megahertz or something like that.
Nice.
But yeah, it runs pretty smooth.
What kind of sensors did you get on it?
I got like a kit, and it has just the board, Wi-Fi thing, and then it has like a case and a power adapter and all that stuff. I don't have any external environmental sensors, but I wanted to try to run like some Node applications and stuff just to get a sense for what I could do with it to attach to a cloud and things. And it runs it pretty well. You can run npm and all those. There's a lot of them that are scaled back for ARM that run on it.
Sweet. Packages. I'm jealous. I gotta try one of those. You know, I really enjoy the Band. I was a bit skeptical getting it initially. Just the concept of wearing a smartwatch. But I said, let me try it, and I gotta say, I'm really loving it. You know, it's such a great device. It was versatile. How are you liking yours?
Yeah, I had the Band 1, the Gen 1 one, and this is now the 2. I like it better than actually the 1. The 1 was good, but it was flat on the top. This one's rounded, and it's a little bit more comfortable to wear when you're at the desk and stuff. And it's got a couple more features on it, so it's cool.
It's got all the sensors here. You know, what I was trying to do is, and I've been doing this for all the gadgets that we've been getting. You know, my kid's got some gadgets and things like that. I like to... When I get one of these gadgets now, I like to sit back and think, you know, okay, how does this gadget communicate with the cloud, right? What's the cloud component for any gadget? Because let's face it, every gadget has a cloud component these days, right? And so I was thinking about that from the perspective, from the Band 2 perspective. And this, surprisingly, a lot of stuff, it's connected to the cloud in a big way, as I'm sure you know. Obviously, all the health data, right? All the heart rate, the monitoring, the calories, steps, etc. That's all being sent up to the cloud, right? Into Health Vault, I think, is what they call it. And it probably uses something like the IoT suite. I don't know for a fact. Do you know anything about that as to what it uses in the back end?
Well, I mean, it's I don't know what tech they're using on the server side, but you know, it goes for people who haven't seen it. It talks to your phone. Right. And then your phone is the thing that has the internet connection, so it's not like it's a Wi-Fi. It's like Bluetooth, but
it's Bluetooth, yeah.
But it does constantly sync.
It's sending out a lot of data. It's phoning home a lot, just using the the phone to as a communication vehicle. I mean, of course, it has Cortana, right? You can hold the button down and talk to the band, and it'll try and figure out what you're trying to say and give you an answer right away, which is surprisingly good. I mean, that all happens in the cloud, of course. Of course, it shows you emails, news articles, all the, you know, your calendar, weather, stocks, Facebook, etc. All that's coming from the cloud. But what I was surprised to learn is there's a feature called the automatic sleep detection in Bantu. I don't know if you use that, where because otherwise you have to tell it. Normally, you have to push a button when you go to sleep, and then push another button when you wake up, and then it knows, you know, that you slept and woke up at that time, and anything in between is considered sleep time. But now they have this automatic sleep detection that feature that they put in, and I found out that it actually happens in the cloud. They actually send all your motion data regularly to the cloud, and they're crunching that. There's some job in the cloud that's crunching that and running all sorts of algorithms and figuring out, okay, you know, based on his movement pattern over the last few hours, it looks like he's sleeping, you know? And that's how they figure out when you went to sleep and when you wake up, which I thought is pretty interesting use of the cloud, you know? Crunching the number out there constantly to figure out whether you're sleeping or awake. And then I think we may have talked about this in the past, but there's so much data that's being collected. I mean, you know, obviously you have your band and mine, everybody else that has one. All this data is getting uploaded to the crowd. Yeah, they could probably use that to figure out a whole bunch of things, right? I mean, they could probably detect when somebody is possibly going to get a heart attack, for example, right? Based on a number of things like the heart rate and your movement characteristics and things like that. I mean, there's so much stuff you can do with that data now that it's up there. It's amazing.
Yeah, I would see it like, you know, for older people, you know, we used to have those life alert things and things like that when somebody fall down or those kind of things. I see these being, you know, they could fill that need as well.
Yeah, you're right. Absolutely right. Detect that kind of motion, yeah. And then, you know, by using some kind of aggregate data, they could look at all the data of people in, say, New Jersey, and if they see some pattern, they can figure out, hey, maybe there's an outbreak of some sort, right, happening if everybody is, I don't know, suddenly got a higher heart rate than they normally do. It could mean something's wrong. So some interesting possibilities over there.
Yeah.
Okay, so as usual, let's start off with some news and tidbits for the week. You put some links in the show notes as usual. Anyone in particular you want to start with?
Yeah, I think this one, and I'm sure Evan would jump on this if he was on. There's some new words on SQL Server, and this is particularly with IaaS. So if you're spinning up virtual machines and configuring SQL Server on them, you know, there's a process there, right? We do have templates up there in the portal, which would kind of, you know, it would put SQL Server on there based on an image, but that's been extended now. There's a new experience up there in the portal if you check it out. Basically, if you go create a 2014 SQL Server, when you go to create it and you create it under the ARM mode, there's a deployment mode you select there in the portal when you go to deploy it. If you select Resource Manager, which is ARM, then you get this little wizard kind of walkthrough with tiles. And one of them that's been extended now, there's actually a new step in there for SQL Server settings to allow you to kind of tweak things like network connectivity, if you wanted to connect it back to on-prem or through VPN, those kind of things. There's also some things about storage around the IOPS and throughput. So there's some sliders up there that you can kind of drag to kind of fine-tune some of your stuff with SQL Server. There's things about patching and backups and also the integration with the Key Vault for encryption. So some cool new features there if you're deploying through ARM or through the portal, some new features there for SQL.
Very nice, yeah, and I just saw some of those pictures in the blog posts. They've done some nice, property panes and whatnot, right, in the portal. Where everything's kind of just in there. You don't have to muck around with a lot of config files and whatnot. So very nicely done there. You know what?
The nice thing you can do there too is when you walk through that little wizard, you can also, I don't know if people know this, but you can save that out, that template, and then you can use that again. So once you like have all the sliders and everything set the way you want, you can actually just grab that and use that as your template going forward, like if you're going to spin up some in the future.
So that's your ARM JSON template right there.
That's correct, yeah.
Wow, that's interesting. You know, one of the links that I like a lot was the one on the Azure Web Jobs now supporting storage queues and exceptions, which is really nice because there's a little blog post that shows you how to do this. Web Jobs is a little like console-like applications that you could have with your web application these days, and now it can listen to I guess a storage queue, and when the message comes in, it'll trigger some activity on that web job, and then if it's successful, you could write a message back. Or if there's an error, it'll retry, and then when it fails, it's going to put it into this poison queue, which is very nice because it allows web applications to farm out stuff to asynchronously to a background process. But you know what this does, Kale? I think this pretty much marks the end for the web role and the worker role as far as we know it, I think. Because there's really no need for that anymore now, is there?
Yeah, I guess. I mean, that's the cloud service. If people have noticed, you can still do a cloud service in the new portal, but it's not really ARM. It's based on ASM. So this, web apps are first-class citizens over there in ARM. So yeah, definitely, this is something to look for if you're going to run web type loads up there, and if you need to run something in the background. I think this pattern that you have here in this blog post is pretty good for, allowing the queuing as well as the exception handling kind of things that you would need to do that kind of stuff.
I mean, it used to be that you had to rely on using a worker role for that, right, in the past,
Yep.
and now you don't have to. So,
Yep.
okay. And then you want to touch on this Azure Data Lake thing?
Yeah. There's a I've dropped another blog post in here about the loading data into Azure Data Lake. So Azure Data Lake's out there. I believe it's in preview, and being able to basically do this as fast as possible. What are some of the ways? Well, one of the ways is to, and it's pretty easy to kind of set up, is using Data Factory. So in the past, when we created Data Factory, there was a few things in there like storage, blob storage, SQL servers, Azure SQL databases. Those could be like your source and targets kind of thing. And now there's one built in there. Now there's HD Insight, and then we also have the Azure Data Lake store. So there's actually a full walkthrough up here on this blog post, like, just goes off to our Azure site and kind of walks through the whole thing, like step by step, what's involved, how you would go about setting this up so that you could copy data and set that up so it runs in the background kind of thing, so you don't have to deal with it.
Very nice. Yeah, they had to talk about the Azure Data Lake SDK, which is pretty interesting that you could leverage that.
Yep.
Okay, and then I guess I'm sure most of our listeners may have gotten this m alert message from Microsoft. This is related to the Azure Document DB service, which is now going to move from, I guess, global meters to regional meters. So I guess they used to have a flat rate, right? A flat global rate. And now they're going to have different rates based on your region. So that's something to keep an eye on if you use Document DB. And related to that, you also have to change some of the GUIDs that you use in the application to using the GUIDs that they used to have based on the region that you wind up in, or you use. You'll have to use different GUIDs. And there's some links that indicate what changes you need to
And
make.
that's going to happen, I think when I saw the email, it happens not till like February, right?
Right. Yeah.
Yep.
It's just a heads up on that. Yep. Cool. Okay. All right. So let's get started on just a quick review. I guess a quick review of the year and reflection on some of the episodes that we did this year. We started way back in episode 59, believe it or not, and now we're at 109. So had almost just over 50 episodes this year itself. You have any? Let's start with you, Kale. If you were to pick a few, I guess, of your favorites for the year, or what are your highlights as far as you are concerned?
Yeah, I mean, from an Azure side, I think the big things this year that we saw that were really new to us was kind of the thing about cache. Obviously, was something that happened throughout the year with, the transition and the model of using Redis cache, and having that deployed in Azure as a service. I think that was pretty big news. I remember a lot of people were using AppFabric, and we had managed cache, so we had all these different cache solutions, and we kind of centralized on, if you're looking for that top tier PaaS type cache solution, we have it with Azure Redis Cache. So I think that was pretty big. I mean, I know a lot of people are using that. A lot of people rely on Redis, so it was a pretty good thing. And one that kind of goes along with it would be Azure Data Factory that we just mentioned. That was something that really grew a lot, I think, in 2015. I'm not even sure if it was out there before 2015, but very quickly, as you can gather, that thing has kind of progressed. When it started out, it just had a few kind of sources and targets that you could use. And then we started expanding where you could, you know, actually even implement your own libraries to kind of control what happens in the pipeline. And then we started adding more sources and targets kind of thing. So I think that thing's growing well. I think that was a brand new service, you know, that we brought out.
Right. Okay. What else? Anything else that you like?
Probably the bigger one, you know, the network security groups got a lot of, you know, press and a lot of features added this year. I think that's really big. We used to have ACLs, and then we moved to NSGs. NSGs a lot more powerful, a lot more configuration you can do with those, and they continue to expand. Machine learning, along with the big data stuff, machine learning is a big thing, and that kind of grew quite a bit this year. There's different suites, and we have the Cortana Analytics Suite and the Machine Learning Studio. So I think that one was one that's was new again, kind of net new and coming out.
Cool. Yeah, that's a good list there. Before I start with my favorites, I got one of the, you know, I guess it's always a tough decision, right? I think we spoke to Pranav Rastogi on the Redis Cache. He came on. And, you know, I mean, I hate it when we have to deprecate an API, right? We have the old cache service, the managed cache service, shared cache service, et cetera. And we've had to, you know, people have had to move off that onto Redis cache because we're deprecating it. And that, I mean, you know, is there a better, I mean, there isn't any other better way to do that, right? It's very unfortunate when we have to tell people to move off something. I mean, in the cloud, you know, I pretty much think that once you buy into a cloud model or cloud API, cloud service, you kind of expect that's always going to be around, right? You don't expect to ever change that. I think that's one of the things, reasons why people sign up for the cloud is, they don't have to worry about the software. The software is going to be there, and it's always going to be there, right? So that was, I mean, you know, one of the kind of, you know, slightly lowlights, I suppose, for the year for me was the fact that we had to have these people move off the old cache infrastructure, and we've started this new, which is much better, obviously, the Redis cache.
Yeah, and I think the cloud kind of drives that too. I mean, so like in the past, maybe before we had cloud, we had a certain catalog of software that we used, and obviously there's crossover between open source and some of the stuff that's built directly inside Microsoft, but Redis and these open source, you know, they kind of, once you're out in the cloud and people gravitate towards certain elements or certain cache frameworks or certain whatever, you can actually see that, you know, right away and be able to, like, tone in on it and say what's, you know, if people aren't using this product. I think that's the reason that some of the thing, I know when we had the gentleman on speaking about SQL Server, that was one of the things they were saying about, like, if they were looking to actually, and they hadn't done it yet, but if they were looking to sort of deprecate some feature about SQL Server, they actually have a lot of telemetry in there to know, like, who's actually using that.
Sure.
When you're using the PaaS version. So I think that's kind of a neat thing, and I think the cloud kind of drives that and enables that kind of thing. Otherwise, it would be very hard to get that right when it was on-premises. Yeah.
Absolutely, yeah. They would know right away that, okay, you know, the usage has dropped off on this particular service. There's no point keeping it around. Just move our resources somewhere else.
Yeah. Or even notifications, targeted notifications to say, yeah, hey, we're looking to either change the service or potentially, you know, replace it with something that might cause a breaking change. You know who's using it. You can reach out to them. Right. So that's kind of interesting too.
Okay. All right. So some of my favorites, just going starting from the start of the year, I think Azure Pack was a big thing when we had those two gentlemen from Europe on the MVPs. Hans and I can't forget the other guy's name. I think that was a big revelation for us. I think this year has been a big year for Microsoft Azure as it relates to the private cloud, right? I mean, we always talk about the public cloud, but Azure PAC was the our initial foray into the private cloud, and now we're following up with the Azure Stack, which I think is going to be the big news for 2016, and I'm really looking forward to that being announced very soon. But Azure PAC, that was a great episode. You know, it kind of lined us up for things to come, and also what is available today, which is very useful, and a lot of people do use Azure PAC. You already mentioned Redis Cache, and we talked about that. That was another favorite of mine. One more favorite I had was the Logic Apps service that we talked about, which I think is one of those nice features, right? In one of those nice services where it's an underappreciated service, but I think very useful because it helps you connect to all these disparate business systems that you might have, and you know, pull them together and make something cohesive out of them. So that's a hard thing to do, you know, for most people, and somehow they have made it really easy, or relatively easy to do with Logic Apps. And then, of course, I'm sure our listeners are aware that I am very much fond of containers, microservices, PaaS, and Service Fabric, right? We talked about that in episode 82, had a big discussion on that. That's another big thing that happened this year, Azure supporting containers now. Obviously, microservices is coming up with the Service Fabric and the new version of PaaS and everything. So that's all stuff that is going to be very very important. It's already out there, and it'll be very important going forward in 2016. Of course, Application Insights, you know, we all talk about how great that has been. And then one of the kind of little known features which we talked about in episode 98, webhooks, right? A neat little feature where you can extend your website to do things. I mean, I like the fact that they have, you know, they've taken the trouble and the time to put all these features into the Azure web service, the app service, because it really is, that's the difference between us and, say, a competitor, right? Anybody can put up a, you know, a web hosting system or whatever. It's all these other things that go along with it, you know, the application insights, the webhooks, the supporting containers, etc. That's what sets Azure apart from the others. So I'm glad that mobile engagement was another one. We just talked about that just a couple of weeks ago. I mean, you know, it was an amazing service that they have where they can do all these targeted messages to mobile devices, which is, and it's so easy. That's something that would be super hard. You know, I've tried to do that before by hand, like, you know, by myself, and it's very, very difficult for my my customer was trying to do it, and it was extremely difficult. Now it's really very easy. And then, of course, just finally, we talked about how Azure is now not just for Microsoft operating system and Microsoft products, right? It's kind of, not only does it support a lot of non-Microsoft technologies, but it's also opened up for non-Microsoft people. You know, you don't have to be a Microsoft enthusiast or person to use Azure. It's, you know, gamers use it. We all know that a lot of people in the Linux environment use it. You could use things like JavaScript, Node.js, etc. on it now, Python, PHP. So, you know, that's another big thing that we've talked about on many episodes this year. It's a big statement from Microsoft that we are not just going to support just Microsoft technologies. It's pretty much open season. You can run pretty much anything on Azure.
Yeah, I think the thing along with that is not just the fact that we can host workloads up there that run Linux, but we actually have tooling as well. So, like, you managing Azure, you know, coming from the Windows side of the house, it's like, well, we have the portal and we have these APIs, but we also have PowerShell, which is kind of the Swiss Army knife. You know, when we need to automate things or do things, we use PowerShell. And if you come to a shop that's totally Linux-based or has no Windows environment at all, you know, the first question would be, like, how do I manage this? Well, they can't really, I mean, technically you could build something off the REST API, but that would be painful. Yeah. So we have a tooling out there with the XPLAT tools to kind of simulate or do the same thing that we do with PowerShell. So you can do the same type of operations, deploy your services and supporting both ARM and our previous mode ASM. So it's interesting that we have both sides, right? We have ways to host the workload, but we also have ways to manage it on both sides of the fence, kind of thing.
Yep. And I'm surprised you didn't mention it in your list, Cale, is ARM, because that's been something you've been very passionate about. We actually had two episodes on ARM. Episode 90, we talked about ARM. You kind of gave everybody the lay of the land there. And then episode 96, we spoke to a gentleman, I can't remember his name now, on Azure Resource Manager. So it's nice that IaaS under Azure Resource Manager, so which is the ARM IaaS V2, right? I think that's what they called it. So that's a big thing, right, for us moving to this ARM model now.
Oh, it's definitely, I mean, it is the standard. That's for us, anyhow. If you're moving to Azure now, you don't have workloads there. I mean, I would highly recommend using ARM if possible. Majority of the workloads there right now, there's so few things using the old ASM. But, for running, like you talked about, VM workloads, storage, all these different types of, the general services we run up there, no problem with ARM full support, and you get things like, it's highly parallel. If anybody's ever tried to create a script to create multiple VMs in the old way, it's kind of painful because we had, asynchronous calls, but we had to basically keep checking to see if it was in a state that we're allowed to go ahead and spin up another VM, where ARM is more abstract, as we talked about, and so it allows you to deploy workloads much faster. Spin up VMs faster, spin up workloads faster, as well as the templating. I mean, the templating is huge. To be able to script out your entire environment and version that kind of thing, and be able to like use that template again, so you have kind of a deterministic way to deploy your infrastructure. Total win there. I mean, I think that's a home run. The other thing I didn't mention when we were talking earlier, but it's gotten a lot of features and it's kind of grown, is the portal.
Mm-hmm.
The portal has gone through a lot of changes this year, and actually now it's in GA, and I'm impressed with it. I think it's great. I think from where we started, back in Silverlight days
mm-hmm.
with the original portal back in 2010 to now, wow, what a difference.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. That's been one of the – and that thing changes almost every week, right? We see something new all the time there.
Yeah. I think the other one, like you said too, to mention about the Linux workloads, it's not just about Linux but also the embrace of open source. Across the board at Microsoft. So it's such a change now to be able to say, like I was mentioning, XSplat tools or any of these different tools that we have, even PowerShell. Mm-hmm. And if you say, hey, this thing, I don't know how this thing works, or it doesn't seem like this does what I think it does, you can just go look at the source and go see how it actually functions, and if there's something missing or you want to tweak it, you can fork the repo and tweak away. So it's kind of interesting that those barriers are kind of gone now, of having to wait, just give feedback and wait for potentially a change to come through. You can instant gratification there. You can kind of change it.
Absolutely, yeah. And then, I really like the fact that we're lucky this year to get a lot of really nice speakers or guest hosts on the show, right? We've had people from the product team, we've had some partners, and we've also had some folks from MCS, right? People that are very close to the technology, that use it on a regular basis, that came and shared their experiences with us. And the one thing that I noticed is, these guys are all so passionate about Azure. They love to come and talk about it, and it's really a testament. I mean, the technology has come so far that you have people that their entire careers are based on Azure now, and on cloud computing in general, which is I think a big statement to make.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, definitely a thanks out to everybody that was helped us this year and came on and spoke. We reach out, we try to get a variety of different people to talk about, so it's not just all super dev talk. We try to, get the infrastructure guys and the tooling guys and, like I said, the field guys and partners and all these different people. So definitely, feedback, if anybody wants to send anything through Twitter or up there on our website, just go ahead and send back if you're looking looking for something specific, we try to stay on whatever's latest, and it's a challenge, you know, because the cloud changes so much. There's always new features coming. There's always something changing or something being added, and it's a full-time job. And to Sajid's credit, I mean, he does a lot of work here too, trying to get this podcast together. So him and Evan both, thanks to you guys for this year helping to get all this stuff collected and get these things lined up.
Oh, thank you, Kiel. That's been a great team effort. I mean, you know, you've been getting all the speakers lined up recently, and I appreciate that to get all that on. All right, so I guess it's been a good year all in, I think, for Azure and for all the stuff that we've done on the podcast. So we'll wrap it up here then, Kale, and hope for a good 2016 as well.
Yep, Happy New Year, everybody.
Happy New Year, then. Take care.
Thanks.
Thank you for listening to the show. If you have any comments or questions, please use our Twitter handle, @AzurePodcasts. Background music has been taken from ccmixter.org under the Creative Commons license. Thank you, and see you next time.